Welcome to the Career Conversations podcast, brought to you by Hunter Recruitment Group, and I'm your host, Craig McGregor. And today's conversation is one I've had on my bucket list for a very long time. You're going to hear from Tim Mallon. If you're a Maitland person and you don't know Tim Mallon, then you need to book some time to meet Tim and have a cup of tea with him. He's a local treasure. He's not only, as we discuss in the podcast, he's been a basketball coach, a basketball savant, a basketball guru for a long time, and he's had a great career, which we get into. But he's also done some really cool stuff that we don't get into, like he wrote for the Maitland Mercury for a number of years and told some local tales in the local rag, and he's just a literally a local legend. In the podcast, what we explore is how he had two careers, sometimes running it in parallel and at other times running separately, where he's been a basketball coach, but he's also been an educator, a teacher. Fascinating conversation where we talk about following your dreams. We really delve deep into understanding the power of mentors, and Tim really talks about being present in what you're doing, and we get really deep in discussing life and career and how those two things are intertwined and how those things also lead to decisions which take us down a certain path. So what I'd like you to do is before we start, close your eyes, take a sip of that tea, picture yourself sitting on the glorious levee in Maitland, and enjoy this career conversation with my good friend, Tim Mallon. All right, so welcome to the Career Conversations podcast, Timmy Mallon.
G'day, Craig. Nice to be here in Church Street, Maitland.
Church Street,
lovely,
Maitland.
Lovely spot.
Well, I was going to talk about how you've had these sorts of two dual careers running side by side. But what I want to first talk about is let's go back to 15, 16-year-old Tim. Growing up in the floodplains, going to school. What did Tim want to be when he grew up?
It's difficult to know because I was pretty dreamy. I was pretty misty as a young boy down there in Lee Street and my family, Horseshoe Bend, Lee Street. And I reckon at about just before 15, I was very interested in soccer. And I wasn't too bad at soccer and I loved it. And probably the thing that we had on television then was either rugby league on, you know, the ABC.
Yep. You might get the FA Cup.
And the FA Cup came through.
That's about it. Yeah. That's all I remember as a kid.
The FA Cup. But there was a match of the day. So there was a match of the day, and for English, wasn't Premier League. It was First Division or whatever it was. And that was the exciting thing at then. It wasn't really any basketball, NBA or anything like that. There was no NBL games on television. The NBL wasn't founded. So I think it was soccer. I think it was soccer was like this of a dream, of this idea of thinking, that would be really great. Mm. Imagine the adulation and playing in those, you know, soft pitches with the fog. And, you know, there was something quite alluring about the idea of playing in a really cold climate too, because it was so freaking hot.
Yeah.
And but I think it might have been soccer. It did morph not long after that, probably when I was around about, I think I would have been around about 16, 17, I did harbour ambitions of being a race caller.
Yeah, okay.
A greyhound race caller call the trots.
Where did that come from?
Well, I used to go to the trots in Maitland. Trots on Friday night and the greyhounds on a Wednesday night. A misspent youth, Craig, yes.
No, never.
And so I was either at the Police Boys Club playing basketball and soccer for the Police Boys Club and basketball, or with my little scallywag friends, all the kids from Louth Park, and you'd go to the trots. Friday night was huge in Maitland, and I'm sure lots of people remember.
So did you look up at that caller's box and went, yeah, that's
yeah,
looks
well,
cool.
the great Ned Wilshire, he was a Maitland caller, and down past the bullpen corner, which is the south, the sort of southeastern corner, as you swing towards Louth Park, towards Rathlouber, I think towards that way, they would swing around there. And there was something quite amazing about the voice. Mm. And I would listen to the races. Paul Ambrosoli on was a greyhound race caller. Amazing, chocolatey voice, very rich. And they had this way of telling stories.
Yeah.
So to me, a race was like a story. And I was fascinated how it would work out. So I wasn't sure if it was the actual art of calling or if the fact that there was... I didn't know the result, and it captivated me about what would happen here. Mm. You put all these names, and they often had fantastic names, Paleface Adios and Hondo Grattan and Koala King, you know, Gamelite. These are the names of famous trotters.
My brother owned a dog named Three-Pointer one long time ago.
Is that right?
Yep.
The great Three-Pointer. Well, they had these names, so I was really interested in... I think what would happen. So it's this little story and this moment of tension, what would happen, and then off they'd fly.
That's sport in general though, isn't it? Like it's a bit of an untold story until the end.
Yeah, that's right. And so that was interesting. Mm. And I thought, imagine just doing that. So you have a new story every 15 minutes or so, and out they'd come and... You have the binoculars and you have to learn this and you like using your voice. Mm. And so I do like talking as a coach and as a teacher now.
Yep.
And I probably do it too much. But I think it does go back to that. So there was the sporting thing, and I did harbour these. I used to record myself. I got a tape recorder for my Christmas with the play and record button. You'd press it simultaneously with
kids
a little cassette.
Know what you're talking about.
No, they
mate.
Don't know. And then I'd record myself and my family, and I only wish I had those now.
Yeah.
I don't have them.
Absolutely.
But, yeah, that was probably the thing then.
Okay. Mm. And so that didn't go ahead, though. What did you do? What was your first job?
I wouldn't have known how to do it.
Yeah.
I don't know. There was no one there to direct me because it was both a benefit for me that my mum and dad just stayed out of it. That was good. It was bad, I suppose, but mum was the one that just said, you know, whatever you want to do, just get on with it.
That's
Don't
awesome.
Be a goat. And so it sort of stopped, and then I went on. So just do other things, I suppose, went to school and then just started to think, well, what else could take its place?
Yep. So how did you get – you're a teacher. How did you get into teaching?
I suppose the genesis of being a teacher or being an educator came from coaching and instructing. And that started at the Police Boys Club where Tom Danilidis and Penny Danilidis in particular initially would get me involved in helping at when I started playing.
Yep.
You look after them because that's what they did.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, and I think they just did it because we needed someone over on that court with them little ones. So I would go and do it, and I seemed to quite enjoy it. And I liked talking, and I liked being when I was playing. I suppose because I was point guard, I sort of organised the players around me to a degree. Other people are saying, "Yes, you're telling people what to do. This is what you really like."
Yep.
And some Freudian analysis would have me as a sort of small tyrant. But I think that's how it started. And I might have developed relationships with the people I coached and gone, right. And it was fun. And I was with my mates or people that were doing something similar with me.
Yep.
And, of course, there was the stories of sporting culture and all around Maitland, how I grew up, the pickers, and you know how that would work, and Dad played, but you know that was, I suppose, teaching grew from that. I think about it, how I would I couldn't get up and tell them anything, but I would tell 20 kids on a basketball court organise them into groups and this is what we're doing and this is the objective. And so the art of teaching, the pedagogy, the skill of like, you know, explain, demonstrate, review, do it again, give encouragement. It's sort of like a natural transition. Yeah. You think, well, I could do that.
When you think about it, you know, teacher is the coach of the classroom.
I suppose so. And but it's also that individual. They've got different priorities because of the individual trajectory and the class. So, you know, my experience going to school at Marish Brothers was we had a class captain and he had a class vice captain in every year group. You had homeroom. And that was pretty amazing, like, you know, because there was that they taught us as a group. We were individuals. We'd all got our vitamins, our, you know, reading, writing, arithmetic, but there was leader, and you either had to lead or follow.
Mm.
And that was one of – or they'd flog you as well. And so I remember my first school captain, actually, Jared Toohey, who's still one of my best mates to this day. He was our class captain, and he kind of still is.
Yeah, right.
These amazing people that, like, yeah, they go, okay. So I think Craig, that was – you know, things happen when you're young and you don't know they're happening, but they're kind of laying down these foundations or these pathways which are invisible to you at the time, but things evolve.
Yeah, they become. Yeah. So in terms of your basketball career, not many people jump up with a clipboard and go, ooh, I want to be a coach. Firstly, they want to be a player. Did you have player ambitions?
Oh yeah. I loved playing.
Yeah.
It was the thrill of like mindlessness, like playing where you just disappear into the game.
Yeah.
And of competing, trying to win. And I wanted to win for Maitland because that's where I was. Yep. And you know, this is my town. And where I grew up, if we went to the trots on a Friday night, we went to the pickers on a Saturday.
Yep.
You know, if they played on the afternoon, my friends and I, we were there and we would pat them on the back as they ran out, you know, and we watched South End rugby league team, which was a local rugby league team play as well. And, you know, that was kind of like, okay, we want to win it. And then we're watching telly, the footy or whatever.
Yep.
And, so I did want to do that. And I think when Tony McDaniel came to Maitland, the first Maitland import, the man who invented the name of the Mustangs, he was kind of a coach.
Okay.
And it was like, oh, he gave us offences. He gave this plan.
So you hadn't seen that before?
No, I hadn't seen it. And then it really started happening. And then there was a science to the coaching. So it was the art of it and then the science of it and how to – like those offensive schemes, like patterns, like chess, really got me.
Yep.
And I still like that to this day. I think about it all the time.
Yep.
Not all the time. Not thinking about it now, Craig, even though with a back screen or flex cut or something. But I do think about it frequently. And I draw them up.
Yeah, okay.
And I think it still was stimulating. Mm. It was a challenge. How do I combine getting a group to do this and then how with the individual?
But I want to come back to that. So you're playing. Was there a point where playing got pushed to the side for coaching, or was there you were trying to do both, or what happened?
Yeah, I reckon I played, and I would have realised. I realised that I was too small, and not good enough to play pro.
Mm-hmm.
Newcastle was really good.
Mm.
This is when Newcastle was really strong, I suppose.
And they played in a different league then too.
Yeah, they did. And they had the youth league team then, really strong team. And a lot of those guys, the pathway was there, Siebel, Falcons. And that was a really, you know, amazing thing to do. And that was very exciting.
Mm.
And I still wanted that.
Yep.
And because that was the NBL. And once I got further into basketball, that was where I wanted to go. But I'm like, I was sort of Maitland boy. I wanted to play here with my mates. And so there was a point. So I went to America in 1989. Tony McDaniel again got me to go over.
Mm-hmm. So this was to play?
To play, yep. Yeah. Played college. Played at Yuba College in Northern California.
Yep.
Great experience, amazing. Yeah, awesome. And because Tony was my mentor, I'm hooping, playing over there, the long flowing hair, you can visualise it now, looking like a sort of a Doris Day type figure, you know, floating along. You know, the boy from Horseshoe Bend, the Americans didn't know what the hell I was talking about.
Like today, it's prevalent.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough,
coincided, I'm at a very small JC in Northern California. Andrew Gaze in the same year was at Seton Hall.
Yeah, right.
So he's pretty much my age. So we're kind of our parallel careers. I'm sort of here, sort of subterranean.
Yeah.
And there's Gazy, who's I love Andrew Gaze. Yeah, I've met him a couple of times. He wouldn't know me from Barstow, but what a legend.
Yeah.
And his career is going along at the same time. He keeps playing. I meet my coach is there, and they're kind of taking an interest in me because I'm interested in what we're doing.
Yeah.
I wrote down every practice detail. I recorded our practice sessions from college. I had a notebook.
Wow.
And I've got those notebooks, what we did. There was another guy who's the local high school coach that I got introduced to, and I would go and watch his games, and then he asked me to do stats for the high school games as well. So I like doing that. I'll go and watch the games and learn as much as I can. And this was, you know, I'd been playing here before I went. The great Ralph Ryan told me before I went away, said, copious notes, Tim, copious notes, take copious notes. And I had to look up copious at that time, I think. And I did. I took copious notes. Yeah. And I think then when I came back, we had 1 year, we won. We won the state league championship because we wanted to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I reckon in about 3 years later, I'd had enough.
Yeah.
And I started coaching the women's team. And by 1995, 96, I was coaching the men's team.
Mm.
And I thought then, here's my pathway.
Career.
And by 1999, I signed with the Falcons as assistant coach.
Prior to that, I remember you got a scholarship and you went to the Institute.
That's right.
I still remember going to the Proctors and having a barbecue for farewell. Timmy, good luck in Canberra.
Yeah, that was a really lovely thing. I remember the day and I was given a petrol tin.
Yeah,
because I had a propensity to run out of fuel.
Yeah, that was you. Yeah,
yeah, because it was a perfect storm, Craig, of very little money and a bit absent-minded.
Yeah,
because I'm a bit misty, and so I would run out, and I would often ring my young players to come to pick me up with a bit of money as well, like Boyley. Yeah. Adam would often do that, and Kid Calf, and they go, I'd ring from a public phone booth. Can you come with $2 to meet me at Louth Park Road, please? But I went to the Institute, got the scholarship, and it was all happening. But there was all those people that were, I was taking copious notes, I was watching and learning, and I was still coaching at the time, and, you know, all the wonderful things that were happening in Maitland through, you know, things that were happening with Rich and Tom and Tony and Blairy came along, all our wonderful teammates, Leon and Glenn and Todd Johnson and Tony. All these people had this thing, so I'm going, okay. And they give me confidence. That day at Proctor's, you know, to say, you turn up and say, good luck.
Mm.
That was amazing. That meant the world to me to think, hang on, there's these people that really want you to do well. Yeah. They want you to do well. They're saying, go on, proceed with confidence.
Yeah.
And I think, like, that's this thing about your career and your pathway, a bit of love, a bit of support, and people say, go on, it'll be difficult, get out there and go for it. And I think from there I was going, but I'd also finished my degree by that time because I was interested in the arts and I did an arts degree at the University of Newcastle.
So that's interesting. So you're doing an arts degree, you've come home from playing and you played for the Mustangs and achieved, and now you're starting to feel this coaching bug. Did you ever think there was a career in that?
Not at that moment. I was still ambitious in a way. Like I wanted to get good at it.
Yep.
That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to understand how things worked. I still do.
Mm.
And while I'm studying, because I'm studying my arts degree with history and philosophy, I'm thinking strategically. Mm. We have history of Australian foreign policy. That was really, you know, the great Wayne Reynolds down there at Newcastle, and coached an amazing team when I was there with the Eastern Conference game, yes, University of Newcastle, with a very versatile small forward.
I still remember Steve McGregor. The funniest story I tell about that, and I've told it so many times, is Tim was our coach, and prior to the tournament, we worked hard, and Tim put in some of these offences that he's talking about, and then we rocked up to Armidale on the first day, and me and a couple of the boys had gone out and bought some beers, and we're sitting in the room having a beer, and Coach Tim comes and rips the shreds off us, and we're like, hang on, Tim, this is uni games. By the end of the week, he was on it with us. He ended up playing.
I understood the context of things. I think I got on and had a game. Someone might have been unable to participate.
Yeah, that's right.
But that was the awesome times. And I think, you know, that friendships, I can't underestimate the value of your friendships and all the people you're meeting along the way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Then, you know, how that, it gives you that confidence. That moment when I went to the Australian Institute of Sport and worked there with Gordy McLeod and Frank Arcego. Barry Barnes was coach of the Olympic team at that time, and he was there in the men's program as and Patrick Hunt, of course. And
what did you think about little Timmy Mallon from Horseshoe Bend playing with the big boys?
Yeah, that was, my brother said, how do you feel about it going down there? And I was like, oh, I was pretty nervous, but real excited, because I wanted to know what they knew.
Yep.
It was like there was these secrets of the world, and even with language, like I didn't want to listen and not understand it.
Yeah.
And so I went in there, but the fact was they were just normal human beings. They're great people.
So if I reflect on that, not in a basketball sense, I've been in similar situations where when I was I went on the Chamber executive here in Maitland for the first time, and I remember Hilton Grugeon and Penny Carney and all these, Bob Kerr, and I'm like, I shouldn't be on this committee. And then after about 6 to 12 months, I went, they're just like me. They're just normal.
Yeah, that's right. They're human beings, and they've got these attributes and qualities. And if you kind of think, well, if they're not that great, you know, you wouldn't stay there. But I was really important, lucky for me, and important for me that when I was here in Maitland's, all these amazing people influenced me: Richard and Tom and Leon and all my friends, Glenn and the Howells, like, you know, Paul Howell, amazing guy. These people that were giving me this confidence. So I go there, they did the same thing.
Mm.
And then, of course, I met the great Bob McGugan, who is through the Australian junior teams. And what an amazing man and so experienced. And you'd know, obviously, Bob really well.
Yeah, well, so he was school teacher at my school. And, my brother played in the NBL. And if it wasn't for Bob McGugan, Scott would have not had a career in that.
Yeah, that's right. So Bob NBL was just as profoundly important for me as a mentor and someone who helped me get along, and then those pathways started to more open up, because then I met Adrian and obviously Sean Dennis before that in Newcastle, and Sean was an amazing person, and coach gave me an opportunity to come back with the Falcons from the Institute. There I am. I'm connected with the Junior Australian program with Bob. I meet Adrian Hurley a couple of years later, and then I'm coaching, you know, I'm coaching professionally. I'm in the Australian junior program. I get to attend the World Championships. You know, I'm so excited in Argentina. And there I meet Andre Lamanis too. He and I were assistant coaches, and we remain really strong friends to this day. I was talking to him yesterday. He's coaching in Japan. But it was also the things you have in common with each other, because we're both trying to figure out this game, how to teach it better.
Yep.
So my career path it's accidental, but it's deliberate in the sense that...
I was going to say, is it accidental though?
It's accidental, but it's deliberate in a way. It's kind of a bit of both, because I'm chasing something. I'm investigating ideas, and I'm also thinking, I like these people, or I... around these sort of people.
Yeah.
Because I, in my early life, you know, I didn't necessarily, there were some people I were thinking, I don't really want to be around them. You know what I mean? And you kind of make those choices about, well, where are you going to spend your time?
Mm.
And what are you going to spend your time thinking about? So I didn't really drink much or anything. You know, I was kind of going, I wasn't really interested in money.
Yeah.
But I was just interested in those ideas. And I think, I suppose, from our discussion about your career pathway and how it runs in tandem, it was about being in pursuit of those things, I think,
yep.
Which led me to get my arts degree, I wanted to know, which led me to coach, I wanted to know more, and then suddenly I'm a teacher.
Hmm. How did you become a teacher?
Well, I left once I finished with the Falcons, and yep. Then there was a bit of a gap. And it was,
so let's go back to that, because the Falcons wouldn't have been your fault, like the Falcons went under.
That's right. My idea, well, I wanted to coach that team.
Yeah.
And I was there with Sean. They were about to stay on with if they were purchased. And then Adrian was coming in.
Yep.
And I was going to stay and assist Adrian again. I assisted Adrian for 3 years with the Hunters. And and I learnt a lot again from him. And then the Pirates came along.
Yeah, how many years was that gap? Was it a couple of years?
I can't remember. 2 years.
Yeah.
Not long. 2 years, not long at all. They still had momentum. And I was with them.
Mm.
But there was, I suppose, then Floyd came along.
Yep.
And that was, well, we don't really want to move.
Yep.
Do we chase the basketball career? See, do I move
life
around?
Life choice now, isn't
life
it?
Life choice.
Yeah, yeah.
And so Andre had offered me the job. Barb and I met with Andre in the Crown Plaza Hotel at Newcastle, and he offered, when he'd been 1 year at New Zealand Breakers and John Dorge was leaving, and he said, do I want you to come over and work with me?
Yep.
And
so you have to make a choice.
Have to make a choice.
Mm.
And so the choice was stay here because it's home and we wanted that stability. And that was cool. No, I don't regret that for a single moment. It was the right thing to do for us.
Yeah, yeah.
And
people make those choices. I tell everyone, Ames and I could have made so much more money and had, you know, different careers if we went to Sydney.
Yeah.
But we chose not to.
Yeah.
For a reason.
Yeah, that's right.
We just love it here.
That's right. And you
connection to family, all those things are just too important.
That's right. And that's what happened for us. So then my intent went to the National Junior Program.
Mm-hmm.
And so I go and work with Guy Malloy at the World Championships, and then I work with my other great friendship is with Marty Clark, who's now head of the NBA Global. And so he and I go to two World Championships together with Damien Cotter, and Bob is our team manager. And
he had the best gig in the world, Bob, didn't he?
Pretty good.
Hey?
It was a tough job. Tough job. I mean, some of it's not really that glamorous, but I mean, we did some amazing trips into all around Europe and into South America and into Asia, et cetera, as, you know, and obviously with Scott and his team. But that EMUs program and the Crocs program was pretty incredible time, from 97 when Craig's team wins, but also before then, I think in 95 when they win silver in Greece. So from then till, and I stayed in that program until 2015, our last World Championship was, I went with Adam Capehorn and Mark Radford, who was, again, these amazing friends of mine, and Mark's now with Tassie, and Adam's working with the Brooklyn Nets as and assistant coach of the Boomers. So this period of with the national junior team and me staying at home allowed me to stay at that high end of basketball, to be intellectually stimulated and challenged, but I could keep teaching.
Yeah.
I could stay at home with my family and keep contributing to basketball in Hunter, Maitland, and obviously with Newey as well.
Yep. So in that time period, is that when you – did you have to go and get the education component of your degree?
I did that much earlier in 2000.
You did? Okay.
Right when the Falcons folded, I thought I'll go and get the dip ed.
You saw it coming, or you wanted something in your back pocket.
Yeah. the Dip Ed was sort of something that would allow me to do that. Not a great course,
yeah,
but an important course because it qualifies you.
Yeah.
It's a requirement. So met some amazing people, mm-hmm. again, though, strangely enough, in that period of time. When you do commit to that, you think, oh, hang on, you find something that you weren't necessarily think you were going to find.
Mm.
And so the teaching goes hand in hand.
So you were teaching through that period of being in the junior program, you were off teaching.
Yeah, Hunter Sports High.
That was where the cash was cut, because I was going to say that junior stuff, no. it's not putting food on the table.
No, so Hunter Sports High was amazing for me, and that also helped me craft my coaching.
Well, I was going to say it's kind of a blend of everything, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a really amazing place. The school were incredibly supportive to me, and I was sort of equally committed and dedicated to that, I think, and all those great friendships with staff and the players that come through and the students as well. So it's really a gift. I'm so lucky.
Yeah. You know, I still remember you told me once that you taught Greg Inglis poetry. Is that right?
I did. I taught Greg a play, a David Williamson play. I think it was The Club.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's a classic, The Club.
Yeah, lovely young man. Greg, really quiet. And so he would vaguely remember some long-haired person prattling on about something, I suspect. But yeah,
well, I was more giving that example because it's not just basketball at Hunter Sports High. You get to see a diversity of
with all the rugby league kids and different sports, the cricketers and golfers. Yeah, that's right. It's a cool place.
Mm.
And also those other coaches. I've enjoyed so much
learning
from other coaches.
Because you're there coaching basketball, but you're picking the brain of the soccer guy going, ooh, I could bring that into basketball whatever.
Craig Deans and Clayton Zane, James Pascoe, all these incredible people that are there. Ashley Wilson, who's coach of the Jets.
Yeah, the Jets,
I just love talking with them there. And I suppose that interest in ideas and how to teach it better has been part of that pathway of me developing things. And I was interested in writing as well, that language. So that was sort of something I tried to do.
Tell me about Tim the teacher. So you're teaching English? Is that what your main subject is?
Yeah.
Yep.
Verbs and what have you.
Yeah, okay. tell me about it. Like, because it's different. You know, basketball stadium, you're in the heat of battle, you've got the crowd yelling, you've got referees, you've got all these different things, whereas in the classroom, you're at the front of the class.
It's pretty similar, heat of the battle. If you're in with a U9 bottom boys class, is the heat of the battle, the crowd, the roaring, the agitation.
Yep.
it can be similar.
That's probably where I'm trying to tease this out is if I'm thinking about a basketball team of 10, majority of those 10 want to be there. They're driven, they're passionate, whatever it might be, whereas you're in a classroom of 25 where there's 10 boys in the back who don't want to be there. Mm. How do you deal with that sort of stuff?
Well, let me put it this way. I think when I finished up last year, and that was after 21 years at the school, and I might go back.
Yep.
I think just last year I was starting to get the hang of it.
Okay, really?
A bit.
20 years.
I reckon there was times when I was really pretty bad at it.
Yep.
And for a long time. And I think last year I was probably...
So when you say bad at it, what do you mean?
I just thought I was either too cranky or not prepared enough, or I didn't quite get the balance of knowing the difference between knowing every student individually versus teaching them as a team. Early on, I think I was just teaching is a thing where you gradually get the hang of it more and more. I think it's like coaching. Mm. I think.
Did you have mentors around you to help you?
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing people.
Similar as basketball coaching.
Very, very powerful influences in my English faculty, you know, head teachers and Bronya Thomas and Sue and Robin and Mark. And then more recently, amazing friends with you know, Amanda Lewis, and then Nicola Crosland, who's, you know, Phoenix Crosland's mum, who's incredible teacher, and they were starting to teach me more about the craft of knowing your text too. You've got to know what it is and who, what's the poet about, and getting that across. Now, the other thing about this, Craig, was as an English teacher, one of the things I really enjoyed was how to teach writing. So teaching writing is a tricky thing. How to structure and creative writing and structured writing. That's been a challenge, and I've enjoyed that challenge. That was kind of the thing that was really going on in English.
Yep.
Because not only do you teach them what's in the idea in the text, how to approach it, but then ultimately, because they're assessed on their written response.
Yeah, that's right.
And so the skill of being able to teach writing and how to write was a bit of a journey that I was on the whole time, and I would learn from...
Because it is an interesting subject. I used to get the poos with English because I thought it was so subjective. Maths, right, wrong. You write a essay in English, one teacher might love it, another teacher might hate it. It's so subjective.
Especially a creative piece.
Yeah, yeah. And so I used to go, oh, man.
It was only in those last few years I started marking the HSC too. And I was encouraged to go and mark the HSC, and that sort of broadened my perspective again on what was quality and what wasn't, and how to teach writing better, and that was sort of something that occupied me as a teacher as well. And like I say, I thought I was getting the hang of it better, and hopefully the students will think of me fondly
at
that time. And if I helped, and that's what you're trying to do, aren't you? You're trying to help the player or the student get somewhere, in your position of recruiting and reorientating people of their career.
That's right. Okay. So you said you've finished up for the moment with Hunter Sports High. What are you doing at the moment then?
Well, I'm doing some primary school teaching.
Yeah, okay.
Again, which
is... What's the nexus of that?
Well, amazing. My absolute incredible... appreciation and respect for primary school teachers.
Yep.
What an amazing bunch of people. They are the real educators.
Why did you choose to do that?
I didn't want to do casual high school teaching at the moment. I did a little bit and I thought, well, it's just sort of a bit babysitting.
Yeah.
I liked being in the classroom and contributing. And primary school, you have to be on.
Yeah.
You're there. You're there. Someone's kids, and it's really important. And it was a good challenge.
Yeah, okay.
And I'm learning again. I like learning from people that are really good, and they are really good.
Yeah. Okay.
They are very impressive group of people, and I feel like and it's sort of making me get a bit better at that craft.
Yep.
I'm earning a quid from doing it, but at the same time, I'm coaching.
Yep.
I'm doing some individual coaching.
And, I was going to ask, what are you doing basketball-wise?
Consultancy work with teams and doing some camps, helping with the Basketball New South Wales program. I still help with my friend Andre Lamanis with his pro team in Japan.
Yep. So what does that help? Because it's Japan. How do we do that?
Yeah, well, just
you can't rock up to training.
Video analysis.
Yeah, okay.
And watching games.
Yep.
Supplying some feedback. Andre's gracious enough to allow me to keep involved with his teams and make a contribution, however silly it is at times, to how that works. So I enjoy doing that. And
it's good that he values your input that
way. Well, I think it's sort of comic relief when I write something, you know, which might be just a different set of eyes on something.
Absolutely.
You go, right?
Yeah.
Which is valuable. Someone from outside to say, well, what are you doing that for? And I think he's always he's been pretty brave enough to always want that.
Yep.
I think that's a tricky thing to do.
Trusting of your
I suppose it's trusting and also being open enough to say someone to say, I'm not sure what you're doing there.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what he likes. So that's what I'm doing. I'm sort of staying involved. But I think I'm still ambitious about what I want to do.
What's next for Tim?
What I want to do with basketball. And I suppose it comes from me, like pursuing ideas.
Yep.
I'd really love to do some more stuff overseas.
Yeah, okay.
And
so that's a good – your kids are growing up. Has that door now reopened for you? Because remember, you had that opportunity. You talked about it in New Zealand and it was shut because you want to stay here.
Yeah.
Is the overseas door open again?
It's ajar.
It's ajar. There's a foot there.
Little foam snakes things in there. It's ajar. It's difficult. It's about timing with your family and everything like that. And it's financially as well. Mm. But it could happen. Okay. There's a few things in place. Love to get over there at some point. But if not, in Australia, doing some more things.
Yeah, okay.
In Australia and watching the professional game or the elite juniors, which is where I'm
positioned best.
Yeah, which is what I'm interested in.
Yeah. And still cheering on the Mustangs, obviously.
Still cheering on the Mustangs. loved seeing the Mustangs do so well this year, both the boys and the girls. And
the Youth League.
And the Youth League team, amazing year for them with Cal. And, yeah, it's really, really cool to see them do so well.
100%. Mm. All right, final question. We've got a time machine here in the Career Conversations podcast.
Mm.
If you could rewind the clock to 20-year-old Tim, what advice would you give him today, given what you know now?
That's a very interesting question. I would say just keep an open mind, to keep pursuing ideas, healthy ideas. There's the great quote, the Desiderata, beyond a wholesome discipline, be gentle with yourself.
Hmm.
And there's things about pursuing your heart, but also being around people that nourish you and that things that serve you. I think it's really important about our environments to be healthy and to be around an environment which serves you and not necessarily which is damaging. And I've been lucky enough to land in those places. And I think, as Robert Frost said, that has made all the difference.
Very good. Well, mate, thanks for coming on the podcast. But also, thanks. Like you mentioned, I met you as a coach of our uni squad and then surprisingly married one of those gentleman that you spoke about's daughter.
Isn't it amazing?
Then I became part of the, hopefully I'm part of the fabric of the Maitland Mustangs and, enjoyed our time together for sure.
It's great to be with you, mate, and lovely to have a chat.
Yeah, cool. Thanks, Tim.
Thanks, Craig.
A special thank you to our guest today, Tim Mallon. What a fantastic conversation. I really enjoyed having that with him today and listening back in production. He's just a living legend of Maitland, of basketball, of education, and he's just an all-round great guy. What a great journey that he's had in the sport, and if you're a hoops junkie like me, you would have loved listening to the various parts of NBL, Australian youth programs, the names that he dropped and the people that have influenced him, and I really learn a lot out of how he spoke so highly about the mentors that have helped him on both parts of his career. So again, thanks to Tim. And if you enjoyed our podcast, please give us a great rating on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening to the podcast. What that does is it means more people will get exposure to our podcast, and the more people that listen, the more that the podcast grows. Until next time, I'm Craig McGregor from Hunter Recruitment Group, and thanks for listening to the Career Conversations podcast.